Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
This is One Heat Minute.
Drop of a hat, these guys were rock and roll.
What's your name?
Wayne Bro.
Look like gangbangers working the local 7-Eleven to you. Robbery, homicides, take me out.
Give me all you got! Give me all you got!
I do what I do best. I take scores. You do what you do best, trying to stop guys like me.
A podcast dedicated to all 170 minutes of Michael Mann's LA crime opus Heat, 1 minute at a time.
Ah, oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Heat Minute. I'm your host, Blake Howard, and I'm joined by the Murderers Row, the superstar Neil McCauley level squad, to debrief the 14th minute of Michael Mann's crime saga Heat. I'm joined by Stu Coote, who does know more about being in emergency rooms with bikies who've been injured than I thought I would ever know before the beginning of this podcast. We've got Luke Buckmaster here, who promises there will be no more easy finance jokes on any more of his appearances on this show. No. Also writes for The Guardian Australia and is an accomplished author. Stu, a vital film voice and film aficionado and constant member of the cinema and also editor of the internationally renowned trailblazing film site Dark Horizon Scark. Franklin is with me as well. Say hello, sir.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we all?
Good evening. Can I ask something? If you're De Niro in this situation...
No.
You're the McCauley of this group.
No, if at best I'm Val Kilmer.
I think you're the De Niro. I'm the Kilmer. Sizemore.
I'd kill to be Tom Sizemore.
Let's make you the crazy one.
John Voight.
Oh, you're desperate to be John Voight.
You
make a great John Voight.
Just for a
night and day. He's absolutely sensational in this. He's not coming up in the next minute because the next minute is actually so loaded with stuff. Mm. But ladies and gents, we'd love you to listen along. We're going to listen to the 14th minute of Heat from the 13th minute. We're right at the end of the 12th minute onto the 13th. The 14th minute of the film is here. Have a listen, and we'll come back and we'll dissect it with you.
$1.6 million. 40 cents on the dollar, $640,000 to you. $150,000 front money. Get you the rest 2-3 days. Know who owned these?
So, gentlemen, we're at the 14th. Oh, we've done the 14th minute. We're up to the 15th minute. We've just closed that off. We can see the fallout from the original heist scene. We see the police stopping, inspecting three unfortunate dead bodies at the edge of the truck. Completely waylaid after Wayne Crow's decision, and we see Neil McCauley and his crew dump all their stuff, jump into another work car, and do a DIY blow up of the ambulance as they're leaving, and leads us right into, and this is what I wasn't aware in this minute, I wasn't aware that we got to it so quickly, was the introduction of Nate, which is Neil McCauley's sort of confidant and also...
Was his fence.
And his fence for a lot of work that happens, but a key character in the film. Even though it's a small part, John Voight plays Nate so brilliantly in this and such a vital role, but just pops in and out. Just another cool man regular. We just, before coming back on air, we're talking that he's Howard Cosell and Michael Mann's Ali in 2001, so there's a stack of good stuff here. But, gents... What else do you say? Immediate thoughts after the 14th minute.
Well, it's a continuation of their proficiency as a crew. They're quick, they're clean,
They get out. Even like the stuff
with the evidence. Yeah,
yeah, stuff with the ambulance. They're done. Again, they've got the bomb ready to go.
And it's not like some professional, but it's just a straight up chemical, like almost like a pool chemical, which they just added a yeah. incendiary device to it and bang.
And we don't even see the fallout we saw from De Niro wanting to punch out Wango.
It's a weird name.
They don't stop and argue the toss. Again, they're continuing on with the plan.
Mm. It's this brief moment where he sort of reaches over, grabs him and it's like...
As you naturally would. We'll get to this at a later time. Yes, we've got a job to be do. Dealt with we're back on plan, which I like. It's very good. Everyone knows. Again, they come out of that ambulance. Everyone knows their positions, like they got out of the truck before.
But I also think one of the cool things that we were sort of briefly alluding to in the previous podcast, which we're now talking about on this minute, is at this stage, the cops are on a chase for guys who've rolled an armored car, who may or may not be aware, and at that stage, they got a call from within the armored car, so they assume that people are alive. So they got a call from inside the armored car to say, we're being robbed by their driver. So at that stage, there's live people. So when they bust over the tires and they stop from future cops from driving over the road spikes, they then discover three dead as doornail guys. And I suppose the urgency to go on a wild goose chase and try and hunt these guys down in the middle of two freeways really slows up, and they go, oh shit, there are three dead guys
It escalates problem straight up.
It's like, wow, this is, do we try and chase these guys who are with automatic weapons and proficient enough to put road spikes?
But also their role is to contain the scene and worry about that. They're not there to go off.
No.
They're not getting a posse together and setting off to try and round them up.
They know this is be upgraded to the
next level. Dead bodies, the bang. We don't touch this.
Just before Pacino comes in. Yeah.
We just get up the police tape and wait.
Yeah.
So we see some great characters. We see our lovely, I think, as Ted Levine might later call him, TV man. I'm going to press play. We're going to have it on mute so I can go back. What we see.
TV console man.
TV console man.
Can I just say, how is he in the outlets for that? Because the TV is actually on.
Outside the building, yeah.
Where is he going?
He has a very long extension cord.
And if he has a reason.
And what's with the. It's like a 1950s television in the 1995.
I actually think he's got a car battery in that trolley.
But he's not getting very good reception.
He's pink static.
Why have the TV tilted like that? I mean, why not
do the due diligence
and put a brick on one side, make it.
You want a geostabilizer on that trolley? You
know, it's almost like the cop is asking him, did you see everything? And I like to think that homeless guy is saying, well, yeah, I saw it, and I'm not squealing on nobody.
Snitches get stitches.
That's right. And I'll go back to watching my TV, which is mysteriously turned on.
Well, the other thing is that have you ever seen a road sign like that?
No.
The arrow is pointing down
on the cop's shoulder.
Yeah. What do you think the reaction from this man would be when you tell him that his
signs of power, actually.
TV's not tuned? Do you think you'd just get like... Do you think you'd get a rounds of the kitchen of like, how to watch
he'd my say you're crazy.
Yeah. This is before the era of digital television and Freeview,
That later, this homeless man at least, and we're making an assumption with you listening to this that you've seen the film before, that the TV man actually gives them slick.
Sure.
Yeah. Which
as huge. Pacino, which is a big thing.
Which is huge. And as Pacino actually says, you know, you're going to get the phone book, but run it anyway, and helps him run down a lead later in the film. But if you're just glancing at 13 minutes and 18 seconds in this movie and you see a cop asking this guy with his TV on a slant that has got pink static, how much hope...
That somehow turned on and
outside. But also, A, it's potentially filler, but B, how reliable is this guy?
Exactly.
Yeah. How reliable is he?
Definitely not a reliable witness.
As a witness.
Yeah. I mean, you can't even tune his TV.
No. And so...
Saying you heard something across the road and you can't even tune your TV?
If only he could go to Easy Finance or some outlet like that.
Speaking of that, 13 minutes, 20 seconds.
TVs, but something similar. We can still in the TV world.
We can still see Easy Finance over the road. We've got these cop cars here who've blasted over these road spikes. We can see people stopping. They don't want to do it. And at 13 minutes, 23 seconds, we see Neil. We see the guys getting into another work car and they are ready to rock. and away from the scene of their ambulance, which has been blown up. Really, not necessarily to completely explode the ambulance, but just to burn all the evidence of all of the clothes and all of any fibers.
And what is good hue?
And because it looks good. And it's really interesting here how Michael Mann introduces the John Voight character. I think most directors would probably move to a scene where you maybe have an establishing shot, then a mid shot, then a close up.
Yeah.
John Voight talking to Robert De Niro here.
He goes straight to like a mid shot and
it's not a tracking shot here, and he's going from right to left. Mm. He's focusing on these guys. Obviously two criminals. They don't have a office. They can't book out a room using Microsoft Outlook, so they have to be upstairs at a car park.
Sure. This is pre Airbnb. Voight's got his
glasses. Voight's got his glasses. De Niro, I think he's got a satchel or something, isn't he? A briefcase, satchel, something like that.
Hey, he's doing a tartan suit. That was rare back
so
then.
So it's a business meeting, but
officially, I think, like that, this is getting written off to tax.
I love how much you learn in shorthand film from about 13 minutes 36 seconds into this film to 13 minutes 41 seconds, which is essentially like, you know, 5 seconds. You're seeing A9. So you're in a parking structure. Yeah. These two guys are going to a random spot. It's sundown. Mm. We know the heist happened in the morning. So there's a clear, pretty quick turnaround as far as hooking up with your fence to fence whatever goods that they're working on. We get a little bit more specifics, and we cut this scene off right in the midst of a bit of a revelation around the actual bonds and who they own. And the fence, Nate, in this case, played by John Voight, is asking Neil McCauley, you know, do you know who owned these? And sort of is seeing another angle on the fence, which is also
a scam on a scam.
A scam on a scam, opening up a door. But as we will later find out, that's potentially another one of the trapdoors that's in this entire
Do you think
film.
The A9 means anything? It's like the 605 on top of the van. Does that mean anything?
I don't know.
I think it's just it's like, random. It feels like it's random. It just feels like it fills out the universe. Like, cause where'd we park? B3.
It's like a Seinfeld episode.
It is. I think George and they're actually walking around looking for the.
He's got the goldfish. But I think more relevant is that this is a shot where this is what 1341. Where really the two characters are quite a small portion of the frame. And this is the concrete jungle of Michael Mann. This is a large and sprawling city. And
yeah, but it's also Los Angeles where there is not much in the way of high rise. So you're talking in one of the few places where the car park is looking out on top of some very large skyscrapers. And so obviously this is downtown.
And he's looking out.
Which is like a different part of the city.
I think that's quite intentional. This isn't a car park that's on the ground floor. It's looking out onto something.
And it does, and it ends, and I love that you're introducing a pretty titanic character actor in the form of John Voight, where we pull up at about 13 minutes and 46, 47 seconds, and they're in the center of the frame. These two absolutely Oscar-nominated, extremely well-known people, and you're getting them in these random, barely profile shots. You're almost seeing them from behind as they look out into this jungle, and it's kind of, it's a way that if you're someone who's passing them, you're not being able to get a good read on who they are. They're looking out into the concrete jungle, which is
we've yet to have a glamour shot, and I don't think there are nearly any in this film, but a glamour shot of LA.
Yes,
like, no, yeah, but they're being very. The thing with this one is they're being very deliberate with the geography here. So you had the thing with the drive when they had the robbery there. What we were talking about before was on Convention Center Drive, which is in the southwest part of the downtown Los Angeles. Mm. This is in downtown Los Angeles, the parking lot. So he hasn't moved particularly very far. There's obviously a few blocks from where they were, actually, which is actually kind of risky for a fence, especially in the space of a couple of hours from the robbery.
But they're not looking for... They're looking for a guy. They're not looking for a guy, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of the geography of this film is actually quite distinct to Los Angeles in terms of it moves to different areas depending on...
The Mighty Ducks are being dragged downtown. They're in the lockup. They're the ones who hit the dock because they're looking for a rogue hockey team.
And... This exchange that happens sort of in the last 12 seconds of this minute is Nate, an older Nate, a great mulleted John Voight with a moustache, kind of Colin Farrell pays homage to him in Miami Vice, very similarly with the same hair, but it's still rocking. And he's got his classic glasses. He's reading over this. Do you know who owned these? And we finally figure out it's bonds. He's going to get $100,000 worth of these bonds, and he can split it between his crew. So it's a $100,000 gig here. And do you know who owned these?
Do you get the sense in with the shot of John Voight as well? Like he's, it almost looks like they've sort of uglied him up a bit. Like he looks a little, like he looks a little weathered, and he looks a little like. But a guy who, I love that he kind of came to Hollywood, used to get away with being part of the scene. You get the sense that he's just still now a bit on the outer, like he's gone a bit to seed, still a player, but not what he once was. Like he's sort of, he's fighting for scraps because this doesn't seem like a massive score for the preparation that went in.
No.
They did an amazing job ripping it off, but it's like, it wasn't.
He's not having the high profile.
It's not walking away money.
No, no.
They're not retiring to Mexico and like having pina coladas. Like, this is their job.
This is that's what I mean. I think that's the great thing is they're here to be in it for the long haul. This is a career. Mm. And you look at Neil, Neil's got an extremely clean, beautiful white shirt, a nondescript grey suit, a pretty.
He's very clean cut, there's no.
Very clean cut, pretty bland look. And Nate's a bit more, you know, he's got that, that's almost like the kind of white shirt that's had a bar, you know, a year in a bar where they're still allowed smoking with the tobacco to yellow it and a tartan jacket. So he's looking pretty schmicko, but it's kind of a weathered schmick.
De Niro's got, and throughout this, I know they make reference, like, well, here with Pacino, they say that he was in the Marines when they look at his jacket. But De Niro looks like he's almost got a military, like, discipline to him.
Yeah.
Like, the way
with
the
appearance,
He's clean cut. Everything's right. It's rigid. It's
on set. Well, that's sort of a very rigid approach to his, with the vanity and so on, in terms of, like, the way he dresses and the way everything's, like, very sharp suits with sharp corners and so on.
But John Voight then feels more like the criminal element here.
Yes.
Like, he feels like he's a professional doing business with a shyster.
Yeah.
Like, whereas I'm dipping my toe in the waters of crime.
Yeah.
Like, the bank, the actual armor card felt like the job. This feels like, oh, now I've got to go see a criminal.
Yes.
Like, do my dirty
business. And also, Nate is the guy, as we learn later on in the film, is the kind of conduit to other criminal activities. So it's almost like Neil gets to sort of sit out on the fringe and be the guy that is separate and distinct from it. And he comes back in and talks to Nate. So, and I love that. Like, he was a sex symbol. Voight is a guy who you would think would come in and be a big and broad and highfalutin kind of guy. And he's so happy to retreat into a guy who's got kind of, you know, maybe looks like he's had one too many sunburns and just like a bit weathered and his moustache is a bit shit, you know, bedraggled. And he's not looking exactly perfect. I think I love that about this Nate character, because you could have gotten any number of talking parts.
Yeah, but he's also one of the only characters in this film, aside from De Niro as well, there's another thing, which has a sort of code of honour, which he sort of holds through the end of the film.
But that could, you're right, it could have been any character. It could have been a Dennis Farina kind of thing. Like, it could have been someone like that that just kind of a...
Dennis Farina was on holiday at the moment, and he was this close.
Well, do you think Dennis Farina would have played it a bit more sort of obvious, almost?
Well, I think stereotypical. I think John Voight grounds it, like, in a... Yeah. Like, or that, you know, and this would never happen, but that almost could have been a Nicholson kind of character. Like, someone... But, you know, depending where he was in the 90s. But he would have gone too big.
Nicholson's too big. I love that Voight retreats.
But Voight, like, you don't... Voight, if you say to most people, well, what's Voight known for? He's not... known for
other
a great
than Midnight Cowboy, there's no roles.
But like
Midnight Cowboy and Anaconda.
But he's not big. Like, he's such a prolific person.
Yeah.
You don't have like a top 10 that you instantly go to with him, but he's always been there and thereabouts.
Yes.
Which is perfect for this kind of character to sort of pop up.
Yeah, I think that's exactly.
He's a workman. He's a workman actor, basically. He's one of those ones where it doesn't.
Yeah.
He's not really a showcase actor where it's like a specific giant roles, everyone knows the performances. He's like, he will do steady work set year after year after year, and everything from Deliverance through to The Odessa File through to whatever. And it's like, he's good. He's always reliably good. He's never actually.
But he looks, he's always got that slight slyness to him.
Yes.
Mm. Like, he's got a, like, he's up to, like, he's always, like, got a bit of shiftiness to him.
But I love his, it makes so much sense for a Voight to be across from a De Niro here, and which is why I love their interplays, because Voight is an icon in and of himself, so he would not be intimidated by De Niro.
No.
That's why they both, like, as
they're
far
all sort
as
of
screen, yeah, it's like screen presence wise, it doesn't feel imbalanced. It's not like some rando who has never acted before, like, being paled into insignificance standing alongside De Niro, because De Niro is so unbelievably in his zone here.
Well, and if anything, De Niro might be the junior to Voight.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Voight might actually be he's almost the elder statesman in this.
It allows for a little bit of that reverential, I'll listen to you. Even though he looks a bit funny, he's got a mullet and moustache, it's that, I'm going to give you some reverence.
And he's never burnt me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still in this game because I've...
I'm still in this game because I trust this guy. Because
I've put good people around me.
Yeah. So, an amazing scene. We've got a couple of seconds left. Any other final points from the scene? Do we want to go back? Is there any other things from the end of the heist you guys want to cover?
De Niro is, he's almost that upstart kind of character. He's a consummate professional. Again, it's reiterating that point. Reminds me of his performance in Casino on the scene, frankly. Looking at how well dressed he is, his demeanor. Yes,
he might the underrated Scorsese film.
Yeah, well, I think
it is. I agree.
My personal favorite.
My personal favorite too.
Yeah. And that's pretty stiff competition there.
Mm.
Well, and funny you mentioned Casino, and someone like a Don Rickles could have worked as the Voight as the older gentleman.
Rickles is a
full blown comedian.
Yeah.
But he does so well as the pit boss in Casino.
And like a serious acting point.
Comedians
do very well
from a guy very serious. But he does have a gruffness to him.
But he's not going to be intimidated in the scene.
No,
that's what's great about Rickles is like, he was friends with Frank Sinatra. So I think once you're best friends with Frank Sinatra, there's literally no one in the world who could possibly intimidate
him. A quick aside, have you ever heard the stories that he used to do De Niro on the scene of Casino?
Yeah.
When Casino's half, De Niro would be halfway through a take and Rickles would just say, "Is that how you're doing it, Bob? Is that how you're going to do the scene? No, you got the two Oscars. No, let's go again. Marty, let's go one more. I didn't like it. Bob's going to do it again." And just busting De Niro's balls for the whole time. And he would get away with it.
And there's another great one where he goes, he's doing it, and he goes, "Stop the take.
Yeah.
You're spitting in my face."
Yeah, like,
"Marty, I can't work with this man. I can't work with this man."
And you look at De Niro's crying.
Yeah.
The only person.
Oh, bless. Great movie. Mm. But again, that's what I love about the Nate character. And so, even in the opening minute episodes that we've done of One Heat Minute, we're talking about this absolutely, it's unbelievably stacked cast. And so far, you're not actually seeing, when they come in, they're so unassuming.
Mm.
Like, here's Val Kilmer although there's so much richness in even the tiny moments that we've seen him so far, it's amazing. Voight just waltzes in. It's just, he's here. This guy is living in this world. There's no, fanfare. There's no big established shot. As Luke talked about hierarchically how you would normally approach an introduction of a character, he's just here. Nate lives here. That's what's really great about this scene.
He doesn't live in the car park.
Not in the car park.
No, the car park.
Not in A9.
But again, it's another great character actor that's just popping up in the supporting role. That ends this whole film.
But I think what works for the Heat in general is... you need a swiftness and a tightness to how the crime was committed.
Mm.
Because from the police point of view, it's boom. This robbery's occurred.
Yes.
Mm.
Robbery homicide's occurred. Boom. You take over.
Yeah.
So then we have the slow procedural element, but we need to have a quick, tight, boom. We stole it. We got the thing. Let's get away. And that's okay. You've woken up the sleepy dog that's got to now come around and go, all right. What happened? Ask all the questions, and then slowly go from there.
Yeah.
It works so well to have this really tight.
Yeah.
We've planned the perfect thing. We're perfect. Okay. Except for we lay the traps of slick thing, little breadcrumbs that need to then be laid out in those opening sequences. That's what I really like.
It's also very good for the audience because a lot of the stuff after this point becomes more about establishing the relationships, the characters, and the just domestic stuff, and the slow procedural build-up with the detectives holding the thing. So you have another good half hour or so before things start turning into more of an action thing again. So you've had this burst of action earlier on, and then you can sort of relax into it a bit because you've got the audience's attention, they're enjoying it, they're into it.
And you stop now and you say, who's who? Well, Chris is this is like... we already know who every single player is and what their motivations are, how they can be pushed.
Yes.
From very little. From one heist.
That's right.
And
on the other hand, Michael Mann doesn't have much time for John Voight, doesn't have much time for Val Kilmer, doesn't have much time for Danny Trejo.
Mm.
And there's, I think we mentioned it in previous, that there's dozens and dozens of speaking roles in Heat. Close to 70 speaking roles. So it's a gigantic tapestry of mostly men talking to each other. And the supporting cast is... terrific, absolutely terrific, and very efficient in their characterizations. Mm. But that he doesn't linger very long at all. So that part of that, you know, the whole thing around not spending too much time to get to know them is also out of necessity in the way that the script works. The bonus of that is you get a web of characters. It's a gigantic sprawling web,
yes,
which is quite a unique feature. And then that allows him to then kind of triangulate around a couple of very
good characters. But you think that's why he's hired a lot of very good, great character actors in a lot of these sort of smaller supporting roles, because there's so little screen time for them.
They need to make an impact.
Exactly. And yeah, there's the kind of actors where it's like they can come in and they know to have a character built in, established, ready, and bang.
And that's,
go.
Yeah.
And with, they can do a lot with sense, very little.
That's why we pointed out on the very opening shot of this film, you guys weren't here for it, but it's the train there with all the interconnected wires over the top. So there's like wires going everywhere, and it is the netting of like almost thematically that there are going to be all this crisscrossing of the different players, and there's stuff going everywhere. Man, and he's a genius. He's,
is there a bit of blue tinsel on top of the train?
There wouldn't be, because it's not down at Easy Finance. No, so they haven't moved into trains yet. They're getting there. This is like,
it might have been preempting.
But I think in an upcoming minute, you're going to see, and I think what kept resonating with me as you were talking about those fantastic, phenomenal character actors who can just walk in and give something to like what is essentially a nothing role. The character of Bosco, which Ted Levine comes into, and he's about to sort of start unpacking and dissecting this investigation. He's kind of Pacino's eyes and ears on the ground of this scene before he arrives there to sort of give him the lay of the land and summarize what's happened. I mean, just even the, I don't know whether it's like the vernacular, the intonation, the weird sort of, sonic tweaks that he makes to the way that he lays out words are just so, they're so interesting. Like you end up hanging on every word, even though it's just.
That's Ted Levine as well, I mean, he's, because he's normally so stuck playing psychopaths in so many other films.
Yeah.
It's nice to see him actually, A, play a good guy.
Plays a good guy.
And, like, you know, B, just like use that sort of weird drawl that he has. That
weird
is,
drawl.
Like, beautiful.
And it's like, bang, 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 bang. We're going to see it in a second. But like that just, again, I think it's a real testament to, also like Bonnie Timmerman was the casting director in this. And I think it's like the stones to cast a bunch of big actors and go, look, you only have two lines. These, you know, and I think when you build a film around 1995 Val Kilmer and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, you get the luxury to go, would you like to be in this amazing kind of twice in a lifetime opportunity? And then all these great character actors and incredible performers who have later seen doing incredible stuff just go, yep, I'm in. John Voight, who would have thought? John Voight. Yeah, cool. I'm in for a role that's like five lines.
It's doing the work. It, you know, it's like you look at Ocean's 11.
Yes.
If you use big names, big like on a sort of descending scale of how big the names are. But at the end, you know who all 11 characters are of Ocean's 11.
Yes.
I went through the three Hobbit movies. I can't tell you who all the Hobbits are.
Yes.
I spent 9 hours with them. I can't remember. Like there was a fat one, the sexy one, and the one that was good with a sword. But I watch Ocean's 11. I can take you through who all the motivations are because the casting was so perfect in terms of the impact that each of them has.
Yes.
And that's what this does. It's like, you're not going to be around for a lot, but I just need
And we to... haven't even got to Bud Cort yet. We have not even got to Bud
Early
Cort.
Early days.
Gentlemen, this has been absolutely outstanding. Thank you so much for taking me through one of the most iconic film heists of all time. We are literally up to the 15th minute of Michael Mann's epic crime saga Heat, and we're about 4 hours into the 1 Heat Minute podcasting saga in and of itself. So thank you so much for being my opening guest. I really appreciate your time, and looking forward to hopefully seeing you throughout the remaining 162 episode sprawl that is 1 Heat Minute.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes, it's been great.
It's been the proverbial easy financing.
He promised. And this is his second easy finance
joke. Sorry about that. It's actually easyfinance.com. We've got a website now. You actually download the app. It's in the Google App Store. It's in there.
There's a link in the page.
Yeah, it's in the App Store. It's on Google Play.
At the end of the show, and at the end of every show, you'll hear shout-outs to the folks and guests and where you can find their stuff. But thank you so much for listening to 1 Heat Minute, and we'll catch you next week where we find out how Neil is going to fence this cache with Nate, and what exactly happened from the police perspective at the robbery homicide division with Bosco. Bang, 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 bang. We'll see you there, and catch you soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Garth Franklin, Stu Coote, Luke Buckmaster. You can find Garth at Dark Horizons on Twitter, Stu Coote at Stu _ Watchers on Twitter, and Luke Buckmaster at Luke Buckmaster, all one word, on the Twitter sphere. Guys, thank you so much for listening. It is now episode 11 of One Hit Minute. We are having an absolute blast producing this show for you, so thank you so much. Thank you to our music guy, Paul Davies. Thank you to Garth Franklin for his assistance with website design. And subscribe, rate, review on whatever podcast app you use. We would love your feedback. Thank you so much for listening.